You are listening to a sermon by Rabbi David Mivaser, recorded on Sunday, April 29, 2012, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to be here and to be part of your singing and your worship. I was surprised to see how familiar so much of it is to me. I think I'll just start off responding to some of what you just said that I wrote to give you to say. So to think of seek peace and pursue it. And justice, you shall pursue. Those are two passages from the Bible. I imagine you know that. In the rabbinic tradition, we say there are 613 divine commandments that every Jew must fulfill. That's quite a lot. No one's really counted and come up with that. It's kind of an imaginary number, 613, but we can certainly imagine there's many, many, many obligations that we have to God. The rabbinic tradition also says there's only two of them where the Bible uses the word pursue. All of them, we need to fulfill them and carry them out when the opportunity arises. Give many examples. If you have a mother and a father, you need to honor them, right? When the seventh day of the week comes, you have to keep the Sabbath, right? If you're doing business, you have to do it in a good and fair way. But there's two commandments that we're told we have to pursue, which the rabbis in ancient times said it means get up out of your place. Don't just sit and wait for the opportunity to come to you, but go out and create the opportunities or pursue the opportunities. So one of them is seek peace and pursue it. And the other is justice you shall pursue. And I'm using that as an example of how deeply embedded in the Jewish tradition the prophetic voice is. The topic that I'm speaking about is the prophetic voice in Judaism. So that's a teaching that's integral to our tradition. I can stand here probably for 3 hours and tell you one after another. And I'll do a little bit of that just to kind of drive this point home, but then I have a second point. I'll jump to the second point and then fill in the first one. The second point is I think we're constantly failing at fulfilling this. So let me just go back to that first one again. I noticed in your program it talked about how many weeks it's been since Easter. Is this the third week?
The fourth week.
Easter and Passover are very analogous. The original first Easter actually occurred at a time of Passover. In many other languages, the word for Easter is the same as the word for Passover. Pascha or Paschal. That in Hebrew, Passover is called Pesach. It's the same thing, and both of them are events that teach us about the possibility of redemption in this world, that the world doesn't need to continue forever the way we're experiencing it now. We can bring it to a completion or a redemption. So our story of Passover, the Hebrew slaves being in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. And the story in Exodus is after 400 years, they cried out to God. And then events were set in motion that led to a liberation. You know the rest of the story. I don't need to repeat it. That is the foundational narrative of Judaism, perhaps similar to the Passion and the Resurrection of Jesus being the foundational narrative of Christianity. The foundational narrative of Judaism really is the story of the Exodus. It's 4 out of the 5 books in the Torah. And it's, when I said a template, it's a model for how life can be. That if we engage in crying out to God and then doing what we need to do in this world, we can bring about change in human history like we can only imagine. You know, what isn't yet today can be. And I want to add that the story of the Passover in our tradition, it's not only for the Jewish people and it's not only in the past. When we celebrate Passover every year, we have a ritual meal. It's called a Seder. In Jewish homes, it is, sociologists tell us, it is the most widely practiced, widely observed of all the Jewish religious rituals. People that aren't involved with synagogues and don't do anything else, at least they have a Passover Seder. One of the things we say in the ritual of the Seder is, in every generation, every person is obliged to see themselves as if they went out from Egypt. And that's a teaching that the process is ongoing. It's constantly recurring, and each one of us participates in it. So it's through all the generations. And the prophets in the Bible talk about a Passover of the future that'll be a Passover for all peoples. They say the Assyrians and the Egyptians and the, you know, all the people that lived back then. So that's, it's kind of code language in a religious tradition saying that this promise of liberation and redemption is really for everyone. And we won't be there until we're all there, until the whole world, you know, all peoples in the world experience that kind of liberation and redemption. So I'm talking about that just to say how central the message is in Judaism. Every Friday night at Jewish homes all over the world, when we begin the Sabbath, we sanctify the day, we do it with a cup of wine at our table at home. We say a blessing over the wine. And the blessing over the wine, it says, this day is a reminder of the works of creation and of the Exodus from Egypt. And those are kind of two sides of, let's say, a religious perspective on life that we're reminded of every week with the Sabbath. So the works of creation, it's like a lot of the songs that you sang this morning that they're so beautiful, just kind of seeing God in creation. You know, the miracle and the holiness of things like what we were singing about the clouds, the flowers, waters, you know. Another side, just as integral, is, again, it's like religious code language in the Jewish tradition, the Exodus from Egypt. And what that means is that God can intervene in human history. The way things were for 400 years of being slaves and having no hope of any change can change when we call God in, when we do our part of it. There's a story in the Talmud that I love. I'll share with you that the Talmud, it's, should I say what the Talmud is? The Talmud is rabbinic teachings really from the time of Jesus, close to 2,000 years ago. They were written down in a massive book, and many of them are filling in between the lines in the Torah or in the Bible. So in Exodus, it tells how the Hebrew slaves managed to flee from Egypt after the 10 plagues, ran away. Pharaoh changed his mind, sends his army out to get them and bring them back. You know, and after all this tumultuous break that they experienced, they're fleeing. They know the army's after them. They come to the Red Sea. They're absolutely stuck. The army's coming to get them, and they just, like, panic, and they start crying and wailing. And Moses says to them, stop your crying. You are going to see something today like you've never seen before. Wait and see what God does for you. And God says to Moses, remember what God says? God says to Moses, why are you crying out to me? You hold out your hand over the sea. So there's a lesson right there about how the dynamic works. You know, cry out to God, but in the end, we here on earth, need to do the work. The rabbinic story picks up right there, because that's in the Bible, and says Moses held his hand out over the sea, and nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. And the Pharaoh's army is coming, bearing down on them. People are crying and wailing. And there was one man named Nachshon, Ben Aminadab, who just stepped into the water. And nothing happened. And he went up to his knees, and still nothing happened. Then he went up to his belly button, and still nothing happened. And Moses has his hands out, the Pharaoh's army is coming. He goes up to his nostrils, and that's when the sea split. And then the people could go through. So that, I think Doug just told me he was listening to CBC and heard about a rabbi who just teaches by telling stories. So I don't think I need to draw the implications out of the story, but just there are powerful, good implications there. So I said a few things that the foundational narrative of Judaism is about really transforming the world. That we remind ourselves of that all the time. I said it's in every Sabbath evening prayer at our tables at home. What I didn't say is in our daily liturgy, every single day, we remind ourselves of that. We pray about it every morning, afternoon, and evening. You read out loud this passage from Isaiah, where, we all just heard it. That passage is read on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish year, when more Jews come to the synagogue than any other time. We read that passage. So I just want to think for a minute, why do we need to read that passage? And I think the answer is because we haven't really heard it yet. We're not listening well enough. We do need to hear it year after year after year. And Isaiah lived something like 2,500 years ago. I believe Isaiah really did live 2,600 years ago. He lived in a human society much like ours. He walked the earth. He saw what was going on around him. And he spoke those words to the people in the temple. And those words are about just praying, just bringing our offerings, just feeling, prayerful or holy or contrite or wishing to do God's will, and not feeding the hungry, caring for the poor, clothing the naked, bringing the homeless into our homes. That's not good enough. And he had to say that 2,600 years ago, and we read those words to ourselves every year when we're in the synagogue, on the day when more of us than any other day come exactly with those feelings. So it was the wisdom of the rabbis who structured Judaism that we live today, to know that we still haven't gotten the message. So the prophetic voice in Judaism needs to be heard over and over and over again. I don't think it's very different from other religions that have a prophetic voice. I'll say a few other things here, things that you wouldn't think of on your own or you don't already know. We think of God needing human beings in this world to carry out God's will. That God created the world with a kind of a vision or a purpose in mind. And in a sense, if God had created the world with no human beings, we might say the world was perfect just the way it was. All the animals and all the plants and weather systems, they would all just keep doing God's will. Putting human beings in puts in a kind of an experimental possibility to see how things would go. The story of the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In Jewish thinking, it's not a fall that they did that. It's actually an inevitability. It's what had to happen. If they hadn't done that, things would have just continued in that Edenic state, right? There would have been a man and a woman along with all the animals and the plants, and they would have just continued for eternity. There'd be no drama, no test, no progress. Nothing would really happen. Just every day, the sun would rise. I guess they would just do whatever they did. They'd eat, drink, whatever. Sun would set. That would go on for eternity. Almost, what's the point? So for them to eat of that tree, to have their eyes open, and to need to leave that state and go out in the world, that is the way human nature had to be. And it's our work in this world, in our tradition, not to go back to Eden, but to use everything we've learned along the way over all these generations to bring the world to a kind of a fulfilled place that's actually a higher level than Eden. And God needs us to do that. That's why we're here. The very first report in the book of Genesis of Abraham hearing God speak. God, Abraham, Abraham, ah, here I am. And what God says is, be a blessing, and the families of the world will be blessed through you. So I guess I'm repeating myself. The prophetic voice is integral to Judaism. It's what we are here to respond to. And we could give ourselves a report card. How are we doing with this? How well are we fulfilling that? So it is a project that's multi-generational, multi-millennial, and one that every person is called on to participate in. Like I said in the beginning when I started talking, we need to seek and pursue. We need to get up out of our place and go out and do it. Are you keeping track of time?
Kind of.
Kind of?
It's still recording. We're good.
Okay. There's so much that I could say. I'm trying to think what would be useful. A couple other things that I love in our tradition is the experience of slavery in Egypt is used throughout the Bible to say to us, you know the heart of the stranger, right? The message is not, you were slaves in Egypt, so now you really deserve to get some payback, right? You need reparations. You should be, lifted above everyone. It's completely the opposite. You know the heart of the stranger. So it's your obligation to care for the stranger, the widow, and the orphan. That's repeated in the Torah 36 times in different ways. Because you were slaves in Egypt, you know what that's like. And through the years, Jews who are religious and not religious have been motivated to be involved in social justice struggles. It's true even today. I'm glad to say that the religious vision or the prophetic voice has had an effect on us. We're involved in the wider society, perhaps out of proportion to our numbers. I think I'll close with one more story. It's a story that I love. The rabbis who read the Bible a long time ago, they noticed that Noah is referred to in Genesis as a righteous man in his time. And when the Bible talks about Abraham, it just says that he was a righteous man. It doesn't put on that qualifier in his time. So the rabbis in the Talmud had a bit of a debate. What does it mean to say that Noah was a righteous man in his time? So one thing that might mean is in his time, things were so bad that to be righteous, it's great praise to say Noah was righteous in his time. What a wonderful praise of Noah that is. Other rabbis said, no, that's actually not what it means. In his time, the level of morality was so low, to be called righteous in his time, all you needed to do was just be an average, everyday person, like most of us. That's righteous. And what's an indication of that? So an indication of that is when God told Noah that there was going to be a flood and that everyone was going to die, what he needed to do was build an ark. What did Noah do? He went and he built an ark. He didn't try to change anything. He didn't try to have an impact on the people he was living with or make his society any better. In a way, he just obeyed God. He just did what God said to do. And that made him what you might call just a good person, an average, okay person. Maybe if all of us could just be that good, we'd be doing okay. But what did Abraham do? In contrast, when God told Abraham that the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah were going to be destroyed because of all the evil there, Abraham argued. He didn't just accept it. And Abraham went back to God. You know the story. Abraham said, well, would the judge of all the world condemn the innocent along with the guilty? And God says, well, you have a point. If there are 50 righteous people in the city, I won't destroy it. And then, you know the story. Abraham said, for lack of 10, would you then destroy the innocent along with the guilty? So Abraham argued God down to 40, to 30, to 20, to 10, and then Abraham had good sense to stop right there. The end of the story is kind of sad. There weren't even 10 worthy people, and the cities were destroyed. But the rabbi's point there is a truly righteous person, unqualified, not righteous in his time because the level of his time was so low, but a righteous person is a person who takes on engaging himself, even to argue with God. And if we think of God as the way the world is, what is filling the world, pervading the world, living out the divine destiny in this world, again, your hymns were saying that. They're just God is living through the world, the creatures, the humans. This is God living God's destiny out on earth. And for a person to be like Abraham and choose to argue with God and try to shape the way the destiny is going, that is the highest level of a righteous person, what we call a tzaddik. I got to stop sometime. So the last thing I want to say is there's a great philosopher named Yeshayahu Leibovitch, a philosopher and social critic who lived in the modern state of Israel. He passed away maybe 10 years ago. And he liked to remind us that we are not the children of the prophets. We are the children of the people who stoned and jailed the prophets. And I think my sense of living with the Jewish tradition is that we live in tension with that prophetic voice and prophetic vision that we must feel called to on one hand, and on the other hand, knowing that we just need to continually work at it in order to fulfill it, because our nature is to just not go at it as hard as we can. So thank you. I hope I've offered you something of value and fulfilled the reason why you asked me to come.